Welcome to Let's Talk About Test Baby, where I ask software testing. Does my bum look big in this? Welcome to episode 54. My name is Gem Hill, if you don't already know. And welcome to Let's Talk About Test Baby. Hello especially to all you new listeners, possibly brought here by Ministry of Tests. 30 days of testing, if so, welcome. This 30 days of testing thing is a lot of fun, isn't it? For people who don't know what it is, Ministry of Testing has released a challenge for July, which is 30 days of software testing. There are 31 days in July, so you get one extra day, and their bonus for that day is just sharing your progress with a blog post or some other social media web 2.0 thing. I am doing it, but I don't know if it's cheating or not, but I've picked what I can do when I can do them, as opposed to doing it strictly on each day, just because that's what's convenient for me. It doesn't mean that I was ahead, but now I'm back on track, so I've done 13 things. So, and I'm recording this on the 13th. So I need to make sure that I do some stuff tomorrow and all the next days, otherwise I'm going to be behind again. And I recommend you look into it even if you've not noticed it or you've missed it. I say do what you can anyway, just because it's a lot of fun. And you can find it by searching for 30 days of testing on Ministry of Test. The hashtag is 30 days of testing. There's a whole Twitter thing, there's blogs, there's a load of stuff. So I definitely recommend it. And if you're interested in my progress, I have a page which is 30 days of testing on the site. It's a whole separate page dedicated to it. You can see where I've crossed things off and evidence of what I've done, little explanations of what I've done on those days. Other news, I was at a Manchester Tester Gallery Tuesday, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out. It was a lot of fun. We had a talk from Chris Thacker on automation and how they do things at late rooms, and that was a lot of fun. There were also some goldfish bowl discussions. I've never been inside one of those types of discussions before, but it was quite good. It was facilitated really well, which helped. I've also signed up for the Liverpool Tester Gathering meetup on the 4th of August, so I will be there. So if you're going to be there, come and say hi. I have got some more interviews coming up. In fact, that's one of the reasons I'm heading up to Liverpool, is because Lee Rathbone, one of the organised people, promised me a couple of interviews, so I'm going to go up to Liverpool and make him do them. And I've reached out to three more people about interviews, and I'm going to be reaching out to more, because first of all, I've not actually had a tester do an interview yet. Second of all, out of the three interviews that I've done, only one of them has been a woman or someone who's not a man, and I need to fix that. So I'm going to fix that, so I'm going to be reaching out to some more women testers and testers who aren't white and all the rest of it, just try and get the diversity up, just because that's what I want to do. I want to elevate those voices. So I'm going to be doing that in August. August is my month of getting interviews in and sorted. And finally, in non-testing news, I've been listening to a lot of creepy fiction podcasts recently, so if that sounds like something you're interested in, I recommend The Magnus Archives and Archive 81 for pure creepy podcasts. They're both very different, despite them both having archives in the title, but they're very good. And they're both relatively new, so it'd be dead easy to catch up on them. Okay, so after that massively chunky news section, I'm going to get on with the actual episode. And I want to discuss origin stories. And basically I want to talk about my origin story and how I got into testing. So as a bit of background to why I'm doing this, the session I submitted to Test Bash, which I was invited to the open session for, was called How I Learned Testing in a Clusterfuck, because I was in a dysfunctional and rapidly going bankrupt company. And my session is going to be about testing in less than ideal circumstances and how to learn testing in those circumstances, how to build up your skills when you don't have the right environment to do that. And I kind of want to focus on like more practical things. And when I say that, I mean, like, for example, when I was at Manchester Tester Gathering this week, someone came and sat in the goldfish bowl. I was talking about some issues that they were a developer, and the test team in their company were having some issues with testing a particular development framework they were using. And there were lots of discussion around the cultural changes and the structural changes that could be made to make the test team's life easier. But at the end of the day, the person there was just a single developer who would come and try to get some advice for their test team. And they didn't have the power or the clout to change things on a cultural level. They only had little bits of, you know, little bits of power, little bits of things they could do. And that kind of fascinated me, because everyone was like, oh no, but if the business implemented this, like, and where this was time for self-learning or give the test team more autonomy or that kind of really good stuff, stuff that businesses that are good and businesses that are good to work for that have good test teams and good products will implement. But you also need profit margins that allow that, staff coverage that allows that, and a lot of other things that can't be changed quickly or easily. And I kind of want to see what sort of practical advice I could get to people who are maybe in that sort of circumstance where they can't get these resources in work, but they still want to learn. Because you can get stuck in that thing of, I work in a place that doesn't develop my skills, so getting a better job is hard because I'm not developing my skills at work. And there's this kind of cycle there. So I want to try and get some practical sort of pointers and resources to help people out in that situation. But that's something that I haven't even started developing properly yet. Today, I want to talk about actually getting into testing, that first step towards becoming a tester. There are two facts about testers as a group that I find really interesting. One, how many of us have a science-based degree that is not computer science? Two, how many of us fell into testing? How many of us didn't even realise this was a thing you could get paid to do? Or did, but didn't even consider it as a career they would want to go into? And there are plenty of other careers, I am sure, that is the same thing. But obviously, as a tester, it is testing that I am interested in. I'd really be interested in collecting experiences of how people got into testing, not necessarily their background, but maybe the moment that you realised that this is what you wanted to do, or the moment you shifted into testing full time, or whatever that moment was that led you down the path of becoming a career tester. Or it might be a series of moments that led to this. That's the bit that I'm interested in, that kind of building blocks that led to it, or the one big block that led to it. I want to hear them because I'm fascinated by it. I got into testing simply by saying yes. So I was working as a customer support person in a digital agency. My co-worker was our only tester at the time. He had started to take over some release management work, and there was less time for him to test, but the workload hadn't gone down. We were ostensibly a startup that was also going bankrupt, so our profit margins were so slim or non-existent that we couldn't afford to hire more people, which is why he was taking over release management. The staff were getting smaller, but the workload was not. As customer support, I was the person who was most likely checking, like triaging bugs and putting them into our tracking system if needed. So it kind of made sense for some of that testing to come to me. I also had the most, like, the least workload. I was very reactive. I didn't have things that had to be done each day. I was pretty much just responding to emails and picking up the phone. So it made sense for this work to come to me. And I was new. And pitching in and helping out had never really gone wrong for me before. So why not? Yeah, sure, I can help you with that. My testing was weak, relatively speaking. I mean, I have a science degree and I can be pedantic about things. So, you know, I wasn't completely in the wild. But looking back, I know now I miss things that I would have caught now. But at the same time, if you're not constantly improving, then you're doing something wrong, right? We were working off spreadsheets of test cases, which I actually found useful starting off now. I mean, I wouldn't do it now, but at the time when I was just getting into testing, when it was literally just work was being passed across to me because I was a body in a seat, that was quite a useful framing for me. It was a foundation that I could work off. We weren't restricted just to that test case. It was something that my co-worker had made himself to make sure that he got all the edge cases down. I never actually made one of those spreadsheets myself. I used his that he'd made for stuff that he was then handing over to me. And then I kind of just did it mentally after that. It just seemed like a lot of faff for very little reward. But like I said, as a starting off point, I found them quite useful. I don't remember the moment, if there was a single moment, that I became a tester. But I remember a moment when I realised that maybe I could go deeper with this. And maybe this was something I could develop as a skill set. a new feature had come to me for testing, and I wasn't happy with the implementation of it. It's hard to describe how the implementation was wrong without jumping into a lot of details that frankly I can't really remember all of now, never mind explain them to you. But it was wrong. It broke something else. And I was digging in the database to find some of the changes or something, like I said, I think it was, I can't remember, but it was something quite techy that I was digging into. And so firstly, I was just proud that I picked this implementation flaw up. So we pointed out the issue, we got it fixed, that bit was fine. But I realised that the problem wasn't just the implementation, it was more systemic than that. So firstly, we had offshore developers, and they had no real interaction or onboarding of the system that we used to build the sites, and how different sites had different implementations and configurations and things like that. They were basically treated like code monkeys. So this led to a lack of investment and knowledge of the system. They were just trying to get through the work as quickly as possible. Secondly, was an issue with how we dealt with feature requests. The feature request went through the account manager, who got an estimate from the developer and then got the client to sign it off, and then that was it. It was scheduled in, the work was done, finished. I had no input into the feature until it came to me for testing. And sometimes this led to really vague feature requests going into the developers, who would then interpret them, and there was a language barrier as well, which meant they were wrong. Of course they were wrong. We hadn't explained ourselves even remotely. And so how could they be expected to build what we wanted them to build? And that was the biggest failure for me. There was no guidance for the developer, there was no clear lines of communication on stuff like this, so he didn't really ask for clarification. He was new to the system, so didn't have the time or knowledge to really figure out what knock-on effects his code would have. So I started stepping in a little bit and trying to make sure we had the proper list of requirements, proper formalized requirements, and some testing notes like, this is what I'd expect to happen, so the developers had an idea of what sort of edge cases I'd be looking at. And then I started to Google. I wanted to see what other companies did, how other people handle this kind of stuff. I think at this point, my co-worker, the tester, had left and obviously hadn't been replaced because the company was very quickly going bankrupt. And at this point, we were barely treading water. It was more biding time until we could all get other jobs, to be honest with you. But anyway, I Googled and I found the testing community, or rather the testing community that I inhabit. And I think it was the amalgamation of those two moments that made me realise that, one, this was a job that I could do, and two, this was a job that I wanted to do. And I think a lot of people get pulled into testing because anyone can do it. And for me, it was realising that not anyone can do it, that it does go a lot deeper than just clicking around, that brought me into the career properly. I did get another job shortly after that, and that was in another startup, and there were cultural fit issues. This was a software as a service startup, and they didn't really have processes in place. Their idea of specking something out was drawing it out on a whiteboard, taking a photo of it and putting that in the tracking system, and that was all they did. And while there was no deployments of their main product while I was working there, because it was only a short contract, the little things they deployed live and then got me to test. Which is not necessarily a bad strategy, because the stuff was fairly low risk, but there also weren't any requirements or spec or anything like that. So it was very much, do I think it works? Which may work for some people, but it was a cultural fit issue for me. So I moved on again, still learning all this stuff. And then I moved on to my current job, where I can actually do things the way I want to do them. And that brings you all up to speed with my origin story. But I would love people to let me know how they got into testing and at what point they went from doing testing to being a tester, if that's even a distinction that you make in your mind. Because for me it is. I was testing things, not very well, and then I moved into being a tester. I want to collect some details. I'm going to put a form up. I can't promise any fancy R scripts and graphs like Rosie Hamilton did with her survey, but I can promise you a blog post. And I am going to wrap this episode up here. You can find contact details at all the usual places. Let's Talk About Tests at XYZ at Let's Talk Tests, Let's Talk About Tests at gmail.com. Let's Talk About Tests on Skype, and I think that's everything. See you in 2 weeks. Goodbye. Our planet would be just a